Hey, what's good, everyone? This is Rich.
And I'm Marcus.
And you're listening to the Paychecks and Balances podcast, where we cover work and money for millennials with the hope we don't leave you saying, yo, I have no idea what they're talking about.
Looking it up on them. And you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at PayBalances and on Facebook at Paychecks and Balances.
And if you've been enjoying the show, don't forget to subscribe and hit us with a review on Apple Podcasts, formerly known as iTunes. This helps us stay up there in the rankings, which means we reach more people. And if we reach more people, we help more people. And if you don't know how, visit paychecksandbalances.com/review.
And today's episode is sponsored by FreshBooks, the cloud accounting software for the side hustler. We use FreshBooks to keep track of how our business is doing and to invoice clients in less than a minute. To get a free 30-day trial, visit paychecksandbalances.com/freshbooks and enter Paychecks and Balances in the How Did You Hear About Us section.
Nicely done, good brother.
Appreciate it.
And we'll talk a little bit more about FreshBooks later in the show, but before we get into it, if I sound like Kanye circa 2004, it's because I got a wisdom tooth out a few days ago, but I couldn't abandon the podcast, abandon the people, so I guess I'll be talking through the stitches today.
Actually, well done there, sir. I got my 4 wisdom teeth left, but I also got 4 teeth pulled when I got braces. So I've had various dentists, and we actually might want to do a show on that, man. The dentist hustle as far as finding a dentist, the dentist non-savings, the dentist savings that do exist. I feel like there's something there. I actually need to find a dentist locally because it took me forever to finally find one in Denver. It's just one of those things I put off. The second I did, and I actually like the one that I found, I moved like 6 months later, but I did get what I would call a glowing report after they did that deep cleaning. Oh my God.
Bro, I was terrified, man. I've never had any type of surgery of any kind before. And so the key for me was to keep my eyes closed for everything. Like, I didn't know if it was a knife going in there. I didn't know if it was a scraper. I mean, I knew when it was a drill because I felt that right away. But that was the only way I could stop from shaking, man. It was crazy.
Yeah, I don't know what the universally disliked professions are and what the list may be. But dentists got to be in top 5, at least top 10 fears. Because for me, I just hate the sound of the metal on my teeth, no matter what the instrument is. Like, and I can hear it like gyrating within my head, like on some other eardrum level that only could exist on metal on teeth. Like, I feel like I'm like in Saw or something, like, would you like to play a game? And then like they just get started. Like, yeah, man, I'm not feeling it. So it's definitely one of the things I've been procrastinating on since I've been back.
Yeah, I don't blame you, good brother. But hopefully I can survive through this episode today. But we can go ahead and jump into it and hit this money minute.
So this week's Money Minute is a combination of a Money Minute and a listener question, and it is titled, So You Don't Want to Be a Millionaire. So for those of you who follow the blog, last week I talked about, and actually, now that I think about it, I don't know who was more depressed or relieved by the blog. So it was basically walking through, if you were a younger millennial in your 20s, how much you would need to save a month, and it was like $415. And if you were an older millennial, it was like the complete opposite, like $940. And everybody was depressed. I'm like, I feel like somebody in that scenario should have came out with a victory. So one question that I did get of many, I got a lot of comments in one specific question. Not sure if the listener wants to be called out, so I'll keep them anonymous. But they quoted the blog and it was, who has 23? Well, I don't know if they said it in this way, but this is how I read it. Who has, at age 23, has $415 of excess money? ! So I replied with a little bit of math. Myself would be in that company. And
now, was it Twitter math or like real math?
No, it was real math. And the thing, I'm going to walk through this a little bit, and I'm going to try to find a strategic ground where it's ginger, yet it needs to be set. You know what I'm saying? Got to hit him with that grandfatherly wisdom. Like, I know you don't want to hear this uphill both ways, but this is just something that needs to be set. So I broke down the math a little bit. I do think it was a good question. Had a little bit back and forth with the listener and told them why I think it can be done. And I wanted to bring it back to the show. So the math, just to, you know, always set the context, what box are we working with? I went with median income because it's just easy. And I estimated down even. So I went with 50,000. Gross before taxes. that's going to get you about $4,100 a month, if you divide that by 12. And y'all don't have to do this at home. I'll have it in the show notes for you. So $415 would be less than 10% of median before tax income. And I emphasize before tax because this would also include employer match. A lot of companies now are 3 to 6%. I think I have friends that are over 6%, plus they have, you know, stock benefits and other matches. So it's not, I think what people see when they hear these numbers is, well, I don't have $415 laying around. Let me search in my couches. And I'm like, that's not how any of this works. I'm generally, and in specifically in this case, talking about before tax income. A lot of your 401k benefits or rollover or however you're going to allocate is going to happen before tax. There is an after tax option, but most people don't use that one. So we're talking about your gross income here before it ever hits your direct deposit account and you go out and spend it irresponsibly or whatever it is that you do with it. So it's a lot easier to come up with an amount. And I'm going to talk a little bit about this 415 amount specifically. Now, generally, there's two ways to find $400 more. You can either spend less or you can make more or you can do both. We've talked about it a lot. I won't say ad nauseum, but a lot. So I'm not going to walk through the budgets. You can definitely find that on the website and I'll put that in the show notes. So we won't talk about that today. And I'll even bring in one, and it's one that I shared on Twitter about 50 side hustles. I mean, I went to Penny Hoarder, but there's no limit of websites that all they do is publish side hustles and making money on the side. Now, I generally don't like 75% of them because my time is going to be spent differently than what they recommended. I mean, it's like watch videos online and make $10 a year. And I'm like, you know, I think I can find something better to do it myself.
That's like those survey sites, man, where it's like sit and take surveys and get $5 for 30 minutes of your time. Nah.
Yeah. So I'm going to defer to y'all on what your time is worth. And as I talked about on a previous episode, that's why it's important to you know what is an hour of your time worth. And I walk through a different scenarios for coming with that. You can generally just take your income divided by 40, then divided by 52 if you want to just get an actual hourly amount. Or if you think you need to put more on top of that, just what is an hour of your time worth? And as I said on an episode about going out, just literally going out, and this was even a different budget allocation. I know if I leave the house, and I proved it this weekend, I'm going to spend $50. I literally have a bill that I had to go and find because I left my card at the day party, and which I did make myself to. I did not go to the night party.
Smart.
It was 48. Yeah, it was like $48.24. I'm like, I knew it. At least I was right on schedule. That you need to know either how much your time costs or how much your time is worth, because it makes it a lot easier to walk through these scenarios on how you're either going to spend more or how you're going to save more. And there tends to be a plateau on both. I think people work in this vacuum where, well, I can't find anything to save. I have done all my maximum amount of saving. I'm like, okay, so what's your budget? And they're like, I don't know. I haven't done a budget ever. And I'm like, I don't believe you. Most people mentally round, and they're always going to round in their favor. So if you have done a budget, then I apologize. But if you have not, then I do not apologize. And if you have, then I would go through that by line item and say, you know, do all these things really fall under the needs category? And I'll give you a real example. I'll even personalize it. I was at work the other week. Actually, it's been a few weeks now. They opened up a cafeteria. It's right down the street from me now. It's walking distance. And it has everything you can think of under the sun, and it's made it really inconvenient. I usually even bring my lunch, and I'm still like, man, I don't want this cheese sandwich. And so I end up over at the cafeteria. And one day I had gone, you know, a couple of times that week just because it was convenient. And I got this salad, and I didn't really think much about it, but this salad was
$13. That's a pretty premium salad, bro.
Right. I'm like, yo, if I do this for another 4 weeks, I'm spending $40 on salads. I'm getting like avocado bread money. You know, I'm like, I need to slow this down. Like,
I mean, was there some lobster or something in there?
No, it's by weight. Actually, I found out the hard way. So something I'm putting in that salad weighs a lot because it's range. It's gone from $8 to $13. Don't get me started on this like mafia salad thing they got going over there. Mind you, a burger is $4. Let's just put that out there. But it's those small repeat choices that you make that do add up over time. So I'm not saying it's going to prevent you from owning a home. But yeah, spending $40 a month on salad could easily prevent me from putting $400 aside for a 401k if that was the goal that I had in mind. Those weekly, daily, small choices do add up throughout the month. And if you haven't tracked your budget, then I think it's very easy to overlook. You know, with that plastic card, walking around with that debit card, you don't have any money in your hand. It's real easy to just say, I'll charge it. I bet many of y'all, if y'all just went back, you know, we're about halfway through the month now in June. If you just went back, actually, if you went through halfway of the month and looked how much you'd spend on food, I think you'd be surprised. You could probably easily half that by taking your lunch to work if you are not already. And then look at May, and I bet you probably spent, I think the average grocery bill, is like $300. I actually saw this little video floating around online, and I don't even know how much people are spending out on restaurants, lunch. But if you're doing that 1, 2, 3 times a day, you're eating out, you're probably spending your $400 right there.
And I think that's what a lot of us are doing, though, because, I mean, I have no shame in saying I don't cook. A lot of people that I work with who are in the millennial generation say that they don't cook. A lot of people have said on social media that they don't cook. So I think it's safe to say a lot of us are spending more on dining out than we are on buying groceries. And if we do buy groceries, like in my case, we buy them and they just sit in the refrigerator and spoil.
I agree. And there is actually a survey that I'm going to talk about in this week's blog. 70% of millennials who want to save more blame eating out. So it's something we recognize. I know can't even really say it's not easy to fix. It's more easy to fix than a lot of things that we self-impose. And I do have it right here in front of me. For 2015 on food, we are spending, the average American spending $7,000 on food. And so, I mean, it's not the biggest expense, but it is an expense. And it's probably the most, or one of the most relatively discretionary. Like, you know, I can stop buying $13 salads. They're delicious. Don't get me wrong. They're worth every dollar of the 13. I'd eat them every day if I could. But it is clearly and obviously not the best use of my money. At least half, if not 70% of the time, I already had a lunch in the fridge that would have cost me free 99. And yet I'm walking to go get this more delicious $13 salad. And it is those types of small choices that over time, and I would say throughout the month, more importantly, add up. So any comments on that, brother? And then I'm going to bring this home. This is the uphill the second time that I'm going to talk about secondly.
Yeah, well, I had a question about this idea of figuring out how much your time is worth, because I don't know if a lot of people sit and do that calculation of how much their time is worth. So how do you go about doing that?
So for me, I mean, like I said, the easiest way to do it is to take my income, divide that by 52 to get it down to weeks, then divide it by 40 to get it down to hours. And then that'll tell me, even if your salary, my hourly pay. It's actually easier for people who are entrepreneurs or work for themselves. It's, well, look at your hourly pay. However, I wouldn't say it's that simple, because I could, and I've talked about this, and it's a fortunate position to be in, but I could live on less if I chose to. In some ways, I'm accustomed to my own lifestyle and my own lifestyle inflation. And we've talked about the consequences of that as well. And that because, you know, when you get a raise and you make more money, and I think that's the illusion that a lot of people are under, is that, well, I'll save that $400 when I get older and when I make more money. And it never happens. Not if you haven't put those habits in place, because a portion of it, and I won't even say what rate, but a portion of it is a choice. And even going back to when I was even more than $30,000 in debt, a lot of those purchases were choices. I was just not responsible, and there's no way around it. I made irresponsible choices. And there are going to be people who, you know, they have debt that's due to school loans, they have debt that's due to health, they have debt that's due to far more responsible things than I have. And I am sympathetic to that. But it becomes one of those things where, hey, it's not my fault, but it does not make it any less of my problem.
Got it.
And so if you want to establish like just how much it costs to go out, what I did there wasn't even really a formula behind that. I just kind of looked at, okay, if my friend texts me right now, which is a very real possibility, you know, it's Sunday fun day again, folks, you know what day we're recording. And I went out, I just started looking at, okay, when I go out, we have a few drinks, maybe we get, you know, something to eat. How much was I spending? And very rarely was it under 50. a good night, a responsible night was me getting back to the house under $50. And that's, you know, usually a few drinks, usually some good liquor and, you know, maybe something to eat. And that's it. It doesn't take much to get there. That's the troubling part. And so there's been times now, and it helped me. I did that exercise this year, and I'm 34. And I can assure you, I've been going out a lot of years. And I finally just sat down and, man, like, how much is this costing me? You know, let me talk about it on the show. And so that was the breakdown I did there. I just literally looked at my checking account and said, okay, when I go out, let me start looking at these tabs that I'm opening. And yeah, like I said, 48, I think 24 was the amount that I did just yesterday. Which is why it's helpful, if I'm going to do that, to now have this 50-30-20 budget in place that I'm operating from, because I literally know throughout the month, and I know the exact amount that when I spend over this, I've at least gone over my bucket for the budget.
Right.
And I need to either make a change or at least I'm cognizant of it. Before, there was no bucket, there was no window, there was no box. So as long as it wasn't at zero, I'm like, oh, I must be doing pretty good. And it's not that I wasn't doing bad. You know, like I said, it wasn't at zero. I wasn't living paycheck to paycheck, but I wasn't doing it with purpose either. I would just spend until it ran out, and then I'd spend again until it ran out. And there's nothing wrong with that. I'm allocating 18% to my retirement funds, and I'm putting money to the side. I got some in savings, and I kind of have a haphazard rollover. I'm like, well, if I don't spend it down to zero, I'll put that in my savings account. And I'm like, well, that's not the most responsible way to go about this. So if I did put a budget allocation on this and I chose 50-30-20, what would that look like? And again, nothing changed. I didn't get a raise. I didn't get a side hustle. I didn't create a budget. I just modified how I did my budgeting. And now I consciously think about it throughout the month. It literally impacts how I spend because it's something I'm cognizant of throughout the month.
Yeah, I've been actually getting the Mint updates weekly now. So I don't get them in the minute like, yo, you're pacing ahead, you're ODing. But I do get like a weekly like, yo, you just really OD'd on food. You might want to cut back on this service, cut back on that. You're really pushing it, bro.
Nice. Is it working?
Yeah. I mean, I'm still dining out and still having dinner delivered because of the amount of time that it saved. But I have been more conscious about that generally. So it does help in that regard.
Well, and let me also say this, it's because it's not to be judgmental. It is to be blunt, and I haven't even gotten there yet. But it's, you know, if you aren't going to use it to inform any changes, then, you know, whatever. Yes, it is a pointless exercise. The whole point is to put something together to make you think about it. But you don't have to change anything. It is just so you know, let's using that grocery or food example. Hey, I've gone over. Like I said, the financial police aren't going to come and and arrest you and throw you in financial jail. It's just like, hey, I've gone OD on eating out this month. I should cut back, or I need to adjust in another category. And like we talked about, just like dieting, like, okay, I've had too many calories here. I need to chill for the day, or I need to chill for the week. I need to chill for the month. There's definitely been times where I have been halfway through the month and I'm like, oh, I don't know if I'm going to make it. That is not a good feeling on the 15th to not figure out, they're not even sure if you're going to make it through the next 15 days. And I think a lot of people are operating that, especially for people who are getting paid every 2 weeks. If you're living literally paycheck to paycheck, just because you're not consciously recognizing it, that is already your reality. You're just in denial about it. And you need, or it would be helpful to have these checkpoints along the way. If it's 2 weeks, maybe you need one every week. Maybe you need one every few days if it's gotten to the point where if it's a 2 week period and on the first, you're nervous on the third before the 15th. Like that, those aren't good scenarios to be in. Those aren't the checkpoints you want. But you do want to be aware of it so that you can react and so that you become strategic instead of reactive.
I'm with you, good brother.
And so the blunt part of this, the half of this money minute is, it was actually maybe even a bit ironic. I think the same day I got, oh, it is June 2nd, the same day I got this question, I think 15 minutes later, this dropped on the timeline. Brand new census report on median household net worth. Caucasian, 132,000. Asian, 112,000. Hispanic, 13,000. And Black, African American, 9,000. And I'm like, this is why I'm writing this. I mean, we have the lowest net worth. We have the most to gain. We have the most to change. Like, we need to do different. There is just no other way around it. I mean, this is the blunt part of the show. Like, we need to do better. We need to do different because we are at the bottom and we are not rising to the top.
I guess that's kind of why we're here with the podcast, man. Trying to help people out. And I mean, if you just think about it, just the stuff that we learned, and I think about the conversations that I have with people at work or people who are really good with money, and they always have a story of what they learned from their parents. I think even when we had Erin on from Broke Millennial, she talked a little bit about some of the lessons that she learned from her parents about money. And I'm sure we all know people where they got those stories early on. So if you didn't get those stories or you didn't get those lessons, you're automatically behind the game. I mean, it's kind of like that throughout life with everything, work, money.
I agree. And yeah, I don't know another way to say it. I mean, I can't even, I don't want to right now. It'll just either make me sad or make me angry or both. But that number in itself, to me, speaks for itself. I mean, that's not even a used car. I don't even know what you would do with 9,000. Like,
I mean, it depends how old that car is.
I'm trying to figure out what it would get you. But I think maybe across the board, we can agree that we can do better. And I think this is one step in the right direction. But what I would also say, and I can't describe it as another way that it rubbed me a bit wrong, because this wasn't the only listener. And that's why I don't want this listener to feel like I was picking on them by any means. I actually saw quite a few of these comments, many of which I wasn't surprised by. But let's put in context what we're talking about. We were talking about saving 1 million. The entire post was around how much you would need to save each month to reach 1 million. Let's say you missed that goal by half. You are 50% off. You would be $500,000 in wealth, and you'd still be $491,000 richer than the average household.
Like, yeah, that's crazy, man.
I mean, you could do that math however many times you can miss it by a third, you can miss it by a half, you can miss it by a quarter. You, in all of those scenarios, even if you missed it by 90%,
it's still going to be a come up.
You would be $1,000 richer than the average household. Like, it's the lofty goal. And there was another millionaire that recommended, you know, what he said, it said a lot of businesses fail. And I actually disagreed the first time I read it, but it's starting to make more sense. But to me now is you need to set 10 times the goal that you want to reach because you'll always scale to the minimum. So if you say you want to reach 100,000, you're going to be happy if you hit 10,000. But if you scale to 1 million and then you hit half, that's still 500,000. So he said 10 times whatever your minimum goal should actually be the outcome that you strive towards. You know what is it? Shoot for the stars, shoot for the moon. At least you'll still be among the stars. You know, apply that accordingly. Like, it's your budget. And as we talked about a couple shows ago now, you're talking about your elderly self. We're not talking about some hypothetical person, some entity or non-existent, you know, thing that is just intangible that you'll never reach. So this idea that, a million's too difficult, so my solution is going to be to do nothing. And I'm like, that doesn't make any sense. You need to be doing something. You don't have to save $415 a month. That could be a goal because you're aiming for 1 million, but zero because 415 is too difficult. My idea is going to put zero aside. I can't apologize for the math. I'll apologize if the title made it seem simple because it is not, but can it be done? Yes. And it's actually even easier to be done if you start younger. And it becomes more impossible the older and longer you wait and delay. So the only way, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. It becomes impossible by doing nothing.
I was joking with you about how I looked at my 401k based off of when I really started contributing and how much I basically assaulted my older self.
Hey, man, no better, do better.
I know, but at least getting started. And I think for me, what really helped, and I think I talked about this on the show before, was this idea of setting emotional goals. And so that's not shedding tears or feeling like you're going to cry every time you think about it. But in some ways, there's got to be something bigger that you're thinking about that helps you get started if you're not someone who can just easily get motivated? Because I think a lot of people set these arbitrary goals that are like, oh, I'm going to save this much. And it's like, well, why? Which makes it really easy to fall off. So for me, and I haven't said this before, and you know, hopefully it doesn't cause any issues now, but I thought about how much I would need to save to be able to walk away from corporate America. And that was a really big number. And as soon as I put that goal in place, and I thought about how it would feel to be at that point where I have that choice where I can walk out, go do whatever it is I want to do, and imagining what that's going to be like in the future, that's when the real saving, the real budgeting, the real responsibility and adulting started to take place for me. So that's something that might help people. If you're just kind of setting goals like, oh, there's this arbitrary number I'm trying to get to, that may not work. But if you imagine yourself and what that lifestyle is going to be like when you get there, that might help you get started and also keep going. So I would throw that into the mix for consideration.
I agree. And I've told people to try to find 3 to 5 whys, because you can throw in a who, what, where, and a how. Whatever it takes to motivate you to get it done, I think you need to do so and get it done. And the only other thing that I would add, I think that's why we do this show as well, because we also started from somewhere. And I really only got serious about it, or really started looking at it in a more sophisticated way, in recent years. Like, I was in my 30s, and so I just wish somebody had told me in my 20s how much money I was wasting and accosting my elderly self by not putting this money aside, not putting that $450 aside, because it wasn't a priority to me. Yet I was spending easily, if not more than that amount of money, and I made far less money at the time on just going out and doing things that I did, quote unquote, think were important to me. And a quote that I'll share from Dave Ramsey is, if you live like no one else now, later you can live like no one else later. But if that doesn't work for you, I mean, wait till I get my money right. You can't tell me nothing. Like, yo, I play that song on repeat all the time. And
I thought about putting that on a t-shirt, man.
Like, I think people get caught up in, well, that's not appropriate to be motivated by. Like, hey, yo, I put it on all the time. I dance to it. I listen to it. I sing along with the words, because it's true. It motivates me. Like, whatever it is that will get you to moving forward, then, you know, it's your path to walk and to set. And so don't think that you have to be motivated by what other people adopt or nod their head to, or say, well, this is how it gets done. This should be your why. Find your why, what's important to you, and then use it to, you know, get right. And then you can't tell me nothing.
That might be the episode name. We'll see.
And unless you have any additional comments, brother, that's going to be this week's Money Minute.
Cool, man. So no additional comments on this, but I too had something money related this week. So for reasons unbeknownst to me, I started thinking about the interest rate on my car note. And I realized that I got the car in 2014, and at that time I had debt on record that I don't have today. I also make more money now than I did back then, so why not? And so one of the first things that came to mind was getting a hard credit check, but I'm not even sure if I want to make that move. And so when you were going through the refinance process, was that something you thought about? Like, oh, I don't want to catch this hard credit check body right now?
No, at the time, I wasn't technically refinancing. I was looking to beat the loan offer made to me by the dealership. So it wasn't really a refinance. I was literally going to get a hard credit check to see if I could get a better offer. And I did. And I wish, I should have wrote it down, I want to say it was like a percentage point, but I know now I'm paying 1.95%. And I want to say the dealership was like talking about 2-3%. And so that's what I said. Before I left the dealership, before I signed on the final dotted line, I saved myself thousands of dollars on this vehicle.
See, it's interesting to me, man, because I looked at the rate that I have now and I was like, okay, I'll be able to get a much better rate. And I remember that we had Mandy Woodruff on from the Brown Ambition podcast. She's also the editor over at Magnify Money. We talked to her on PB46. And I remember Magnify Money being a good resource to check out before making any financial moves. And no, they did not pay us to say any of this. I just remembered it because I've heard about it so many times. And I was surprised at how easy it was to see which loans might be the best. Also, what type of rates I'd qualify for if I did choose to go about refinancing and getting a better rate. And it turns out that I actually got a pretty good deal, it seems, because even the rates that popped up for me, they were typically higher than the rate that I got when I initially got the car. And I thought SoFi was going to come in lower, and it actually came in higher, which was surprising. So I'm trying to figure out, like, is that because I approached it as a personal loan versus an auto loan? And I realized with the auto loans, I think they consider an auto loan like before you actually get the car. So you're about to go to the dealership, you're trying to get those spinners, that new whatever. People aren't getting spinners in 2017.
I was going to let it go, bro. I was like,
nah, I refuse to go out like that. And so you're thinking about getting this new whip, cloth, leather seats, whatever. So that's an auto loan versus a personal loan. You've already got the car. You already got a car note, but you're just trying to get a better rate. And I found that either way, no matter what, the rate was still higher than the rate that I have now. And I was able to see a pretty good breakdown of the different loans, which ones get the A+, what the terms are, what the rate would look like. And what I found is that for the lowest rates, it was like, yeah, you'll need to pay this off in 12 to 24 months. And I was like, nah. And so I think ultimately what I'm going to do is just start paying more on the car note now, since I eliminated the credit card debt, and just pay it off that way versus refinancing, having to pay a higher monthly payment and having to pay it in a shorter amount of time.
Yeah. And now that you mentioned that, I did pay off my other vehicle quicker rather than refinance. Does the loan that you have now, is it through a credit union?
No, it's actually through Bank of America.
You may want to compare rates at a credit union, because those are generally harder, not difficult. I've noticed that they're harder to price compare online. It's like you have to go to specific credit union. But yeah, I think you've taken the appropriate steps as far as checking with the peer-to-peer through SoFi, which is, I think, their full name, Social Finance, going by SoFi. And I do wonder, and I mean, you actually might have clarified for me, if you usually the bigger savings on any loan is, yes, when you have a secured asset of which a vehicle would qualify for. But it sounds like you said if you've had the vehicle for a certain time, then they're just going to see it as a personal loan. So I could see why the interest rates may be higher. I wonder if the credit union might be able to beat that. So essentially they would replace the loan that you have using your car as a secured asset.
Yeah, that might be the move, is look into some of the credit unions, because I know that's something that didn't come up when it was running through the list. I mean, I think there might have been a couple in there, but I know that there are so many other credit unions out there. I mean, even ones just in my neighborhood. I might just stop in one day after work or something like that, or on a work from home day, and just be like, yo, what's this money looking like? I'm just trying to avoid that hard credit check for now. And that was the other cool thing, is that when I used this site, and I'm sure there's other sites like this, and I'm sure there are a lot of loan providers like this where they do the soft check and say, okay, here's the pre-approved rate, versus now we're going to do a hard check and then tell you what the rate is going to be. So this is a good way for people to avoid that, because, man, in the past, my younger self, and I'm sure I probably did this, is like, I want a better rate. And then I just go and run 3 hard credit checks, which are totally unnecessary, which then make it more difficult if I don't decide to do anything in that moment, but then decide to do something later on.
I like how your young self was like really young sounding, like 7-year-old you was checking credit scores, which I guess is a very real possibility. But yeah, I would also say another benefit of going to a credit union, and I think some of these social finance organizations as well, but more specifically the credit union, is they specialize. I mean, that is their business model, is how can we make you a member of this credit union the best offer? So they tend to be more negotiable, more informative, more willing, I feel, in my experience, to have that back and forth conversation with you, like, what's the best financial product for you? Not what's something we can just sign you and get you on the dotted line and we can make money off you. So I've had literally better personal experiences multiple times working with credit unions.
Yeah, I think I'm going to need to look into that, like this week or maybe next. I don't know.
Look forward to the follow up. Best of luck, brother.
Definitely, definitely, man. But before we jump into this week in work, shout out again to our sponsor, FreshBooks. If you're a side hustler or thinking about dipping your toes into entrepreneurship, you not only need to separate your bank accounts, but also pick up an accounting software that makes it easy so you can spend more time being a boss. And I love that I don't have to wait through spreadsheets to understand how we're doing every month. So FreshBooks is offering PNB listeners a free 30-day trial to get familiar, to sign up and see what easy accounting is like. That's what happens when we do this live. Visit paychecksandbalances.com/freshbooks and enter paychecks and balances in the how did you hear about us section. So for this week in work, man, I've been reflecting on life as a manager, and I think I've decided it's not for the faint of heart, the thin-skinned, or the emotionally available. Notice I said available, not unavailable. And I promise that there's some nugget that's in here somewhere. But anyway, it kind of reminds me of when I pledged the fraternity and people said I changed. But the truth is that people just looked at me differently and everyone kind of changed around me. And I was reminded of this because I had this incident that kind of pushed everything to a new level and made me realize kind of where I fall in the caste system now. And I kind of feel like an outsider in some ways. So I was sitting at my desk in a nice open office layout, felt my stomach rumble with the pangs of first world hunger. And I'm sure people near me heard it. I mean, my stomach was rumbling mad loud. And so, you know, I look up and I exclaim, man, I'm hungry, almost time to go to the cafeteria. And so a coworker on one side of me then says to the coworker on the other side, hey, you want to get lunch? And so they basically talked right through me, like heard me say, I'm hungry, about to go to the cafeteria. And they were just like, oh, well, we're going to go get lunch. And I felt left out, bruh. Like I felt that in my core, man. This manager life is just different, man. It's just different.
I was going to ask you, do y'all have a manager table?
Nah, we don't. I think people just kind of.
And I don't mean like literally like with a tent on it that says for managers only, reserved with bottles around it. I mean, like if you go to lunch, the managers just naturally roam and sit together. It's weird. And I feel like I get along well with my staff, my person. They say hi to me in the hallway. We have conversations. They eye in me. But lunch, like unless I literally put it on someone's calendar or say, hey, let's go here specifically. Do you want to roll with me? It's manager's lunch, man. Yeah, I told you, man. I remember when it happened to me, we were planning. Well, this is how much it hurts. I actually feel a tear gathering in the corner of my eye. They were planning.
I do too,
happy
man.
Hour.
I'm still feeling it.
Yeah. And same thing. I was in an officle, you know, a corner, you know, office cubicle that I had worked my scratched and clawed my way up to by the window so I could see the mountains. And they were just planning happy hour around me. Like multiple people were walking over. I was hearing IMs go, hey, make sure you, hey, did we invite in? And I'm just sitting there like, I'm like, surely they'll come over here after they, you know, arrange all the plans. They just think I'm busy because I'm a manager, man. Nope. Never. I was not extended an invitation. I did not make it to that staff, I guess, happy hour. Now I still feel some type of way about it.
And it's crazy because someone may say, well, you're an introvert. And I'm like, yeah, I'm an introvert. So if I announce my hunger or desire to go to the cafeteria versus just going to the cafeteria, it means I want to be social. Otherwise, I just go by myself and not say to anybody.
You know, I'm reminiscent. And I actually feel even more of a type of way about this. There was one weekend where I was sick and I didn't even want to go out and no one hit me up all weekend. No texts. No phone call, no, hey, I want to go here. Are you thinking about going there? This is going on. Like, I was irate. I'm still, I don't even use that word very often. I'm not even sure if I'm using it correctly in the appropriate context, but I feel like that's the word that would describe the feeling that I had and still feel some type of way about now. And I felt only slightly less offended by that at work when I didn't get invited to the happy hour.
Yeah, man. And there have been times since then where they're like, hey, Rich, do you want to go to lunch? And of course, those times I'm like, nah, I'm gonna eat at my desk. And it's like, see, we told you. And I'm like, no, but I exclaimed that I was hungry and my stomach rumbled. You're basically sitting on each side of me and you just left me out the mix. And then I had this other situation where I was venting to someone about something. And by the way, my vents are like mad mild. I don't go nuclear on anybody. I try to stay out of the gossip and all of that stuff. And I usually wrap my vents up in jokes to keep stuff light. And I try to include something uplifting at the end. So like, yeah, man, this is some BS. Pursue your dreams, you know, so something to keep it light and fresh. And I got to the punchline of what I thought was a light joke. And they were like, do you need me to do something? And and I'm like, no, I'm just talking to you. I'm just venting, man. And I just realized, man, like I'm a manager venting in a conference room at work. I'm a manager. Sad state of affairs, man. I can't even vent the same anymore. Now I can only go vent to the other managers.
Bruh, I am familiar with that struggle. And I think I told you this. I think I IM'd you about this at work. Literally, I think the most offensive thing that has happened to me in the 16 or so, 18 months that I've been in this new job is I tried the same thing. And I think I can't remember if it was the interns or the younger staff. I can't really remember who it was, but I distinctly remember being in front of a room and cracking a Price is Right joke. I was like, come on down. And no one got it. I shut the meeting down. I shut the meeting down. I closed my laptop and left. I was like, I can't deal with y'all right now. No one got the come on down reference. They're like, come on, where is it? Where is it from? Is that a punchline? I was like, meeting adjourned. And I went back to my office and I was hot. Like I wasn't play, like kind of, like, no, I was upset. Like, this meeting is ending early.
I mean, are you working with a bunch of millennials who are on the other side of the median age of the millennial generation?
I'm working with more now, but I think you also have to keep in mind, I am the only one that is still in denial about being the young person in the office. Like, I still remember in my head that I remember being the youngest person in the office. And now I'm like, you know, I'm mid-level management. So I'm literally by age, like in the middle also of the median dynamic of people represented in my office. So I can't even really say that people are just young. I'm just old. It is just a combination of both.
Yeah, man. It's interesting because I think I'm realizing it, and I think this is also natural to everything, that just as you move up, just also how you need to adjust, how you talk to people, how you handle situations. And it sounds second nature, but I think a lot of people struggle with this. And I know that I've been struggling with it as these two stories indicate. But you just got to remember that as you move up in the organization, not only is there more expected of you from whoever your manager is, there's more expected of you from the people you work with. The other crazy thing is going from being peers with people to then managing them. And that's what's happened here. I mean, the people that I'm talking about are people that, you know, it was all good just a few months ago. You know, we were all in the trenches together. But then as soon as I made that leap, nothing was the same. And so adjusting to that, it takes time. And I even have situations now where I start to say something, maybe I'm going to vent. And I think I talked before about how I have these moments where I feel like I got to be uplifting. And I have these moments where I'm like having a negative thought. I'm like, you know, I probably could have got away with saying that like 3 months ago. But now that I'm leading up a team, I got to completely tweak my approach because I don't want to then develop the reputation of being the infectious negative person who's bringing people down. And that's not even how I am, but I just noticed in the way that I say things now and the way people respond. And it's funny because the responses now are a lot more silence than anything else. Just people looking at me.
Yeah. I'm familiar with that. And I won't go on too much of a tangent here, but I had something relative to that conversation recently, and I've had many more, I guess, maybe experiences over the years. I mean, maybe that's what management is. It's really just a collection of shared experiences. And as I have shared before, you know, use your 20s to learn and your 30s to apply and your 40s to teach. I'm trying to bend that curve forward, bend it like Beckham. I just realized like half the crowd isn't going to get that reference. And you know what? I'm going to move on.
I kind of don't get it, fam. I'm sorry, man.
You know what? I'm not going to go there right now.
Is it a credit card? Is it a dollar bill acquisition type situation?
It is a straight to DVD movie that came out in the 2000s, I believe, called Bend It Like Beckham, where a young soccer woman learned it to bend it literally like Beckham. I think he made a cameo in the movie.
we might have to talk about that a little bit more after the show.
Anyway, back to the moral of the story here. What I've been in, and I'm more or less trying this out, and you know, I'll say that being a manager, for the folks who are unsympathetic to this management plight, assuming you're still here and you haven't checked out, it's like being a parent. Like when you were parents, you thought they knew everything. And I was literally driving the other day and I realized this conversation I had with my dad, he was 40 at the time. And it was a really profound conversation. And I was driving and I was like, man, he was 40 having this conversation with, you know, 10-year-old me. And that was just really strange to me. And that's what managing is. You are going through it in real time and everyone thinks you know what you're talking about. And you're like, man, I hope they know that I don't really know how to pilot this plane, but we're all going to figure it out together. Yet you have to look like you're, you know, Captain Sully up there like, oh, man, I got it together. Don't worry about it, folks. Or really, you know, you're calling the tower like it's going down. That being said, I was talking to somebody recently about an issue they were experiencing. And to your point, what I have tried there, and I think it went over successfully, was I'm going to answer this in two ways because I felt like I did what you did the first time. I actually came back to him because I didn't like how I handled it the first conversation. It was like a week before and we were both in a bad place. And I felt like I answered it as Marcus instead of manager. And so I actually went back to the individual and I go, I really want to talk to you about that conversation we had last week. And I want to give you two responses now. And I think we have a close relationship as well. On the Venn diagram of me at work, there is Marcus who comes to work and is a manager. Then there is a manager by job description. And then somewhere along the way, those two circles overlap. The way I answered that last week, I want you to know Marcus answered that question. And here is the management response that I'm going to give you, because I think it is equally important for you to know that. And I think this individual is going to work their way up in the organization. But I would say that it's really two hats, or in this case, two circles that overlap. Because, yes, there's times where I'm like, I go to work and I do a job, but my job does not define me. I think I'm good at it. My job is just a part of me. I actually go on to my job. I literally put on a uniform and then I do what is required of me on my job description. But every now and then something will happen that upsets Marcus, which makes it a lot more difficult for Marcus to be manager. And this person happened to catch me and Marcus answering the question. And Marcus is pretty blunt. He's got some things on his mind. He got some stuff he needs to get off his chest. And sometimes he got to say it with his chest. And he caught the brunt of that. And it wasn't his fault. He was just, you know, looking for information, and he just caught me at the wrong time of day. My coffee was probably wearing off. But I share that because I think for the managers out there, the people who are moving into management and the people who are being managed, I really think that's something that we should all be aware of. That at the end of the day, these are individuals who step into the role of manager and then leave and go into the role of being themselves. And every now and then, depending on which cloak or hat they have on, that's who you're speaking to.
Yeah. You know, I'm glad you made that point, because I think about other people who've recently become managers. And I think a lot of us have had a bad manager in the past. And I think what I can appreciate a lot more now, and it sounds callous for me not to have been able to appreciate this before, but that they are also people. And you hear people vent, complain, this person is struggling, they're not giving clear feedback, they suck. And it's like, yo, they're trying to get the hang of it, just like when you first started a job, they're now doing something completely different. It's like graduating to the next level and you got to start all over again, except that you have some of that experience from the previous levels to take with you. But it's like a whole new playing field. It's like there's like new Goombas and paratroopers and other, I'm probably dating myself too with that reference.
See, now I need to offline ask you what the heck a Goomba is, but we definitely can't resolve it right now.
Bro, that's unacceptable, man.
We're
going to talk about it during happy hour, but that's unacceptable.
I will write it down right now. I'm literally putting it in my notes. Goomba, what a question mark. I probably spelled it wrong. But yes, what I would just maybe add or end with is, I'll put it like this. If I had to put it in a metaphor, being a worker prepares you for being a manager in the same way going to high school prepares you for college, in that it doesn't. Just like college allegedly prepares you for the real world, it doesn't. It is an on-the-job learning experience. And like anything else, I think there are people with some tangible, natural talents that make them better at it or worse. But I think all can learn and improve from it. But it is, if they're willing to, a learning experience. Like, I think in both scenarios, with some standardized training, most of my management experience was, hey, you know how you were a worker on Friday?
Yeah.
And well, you're a supervisor on Monday. And yeah, I mean, arguably, was I prepared because I had been working in this role and function? Yes. But the only thing that happened that changed as far as my responsibility, and I know some people have the benefit of they're either trained by the person going into it, or they have a mentor or a coach or a sponsor, or they have a 6-month window or whatever the case may be. But all that being said, most of the time it's, hey, you were doing A, now you're doing with B. And guess what? B has a lot more responsibility, a lot more purview. And a lot of times you still have to do what was expected of you at A better, plus teach other people how now to do A, plus all the responsibilities you have under B.
Yeah, that's the crazy part is, and I've talked about this before, is just like learning how to delegate. Like that's probably the single biggest skill that I'm working to improve that's going to ultimately make my life easier. Because I still have these situations where I'm like, oh, let me just do this myself. And I'm like, well, I have a team of people. Someone else could do this. Oh, but they're busy. I can do it. And I'm like, yo, I got to just train people to do some of the stuff that I know really well. so I can focus on actually being a manager and also at the same time focus on developing people and focus on being strategic, which is the part that I've really looked forward to, being able to actually change things and put stuff in place versus just kind of take orders and go about my day and do what I'm told. So it's all one big learning experience. But yeah, I think you added a couple nuggets there, good brother.
Appreciate it, sir.
Cool, man. So that is it for this week's episode. And today's episode was executive produced by PNB patrons Michael M., Mo S., Terrell C., and Stephanie S. To learn how to become an executive producer and how to get early access to episodes when available, visit paychecksandbalances.com/patron, PATRON.
And don't forget to join our email list by visiting paychecksandbalances.com/email. You'll receive our weekly newsletter where we share interesting articles we've discovered, actionable work and money tips, and much more.
And so again, thanks to everyone for listening. If you have questions you'd like us to potentially cover on the show, you can email us at info@paychecksandbalances.com or visit our website and click the Ask PB button. I almost forgot what the button actually said. But until next time, be safe. We out. Peace.